Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hey, it's Boomer.
And Geo.
Boomer and Geo is both a radio show and a podcast. You can find us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Catch the full episode, listen by individual hour, or jump straight to the highlights. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search Boomer and Geo, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
You needed a laundry list of things to go wrong for you to blow a 19-0 lead and a 26-8 lead mid-fourth quarter. But if you heard the top of the show, rewind on the Odyssey app, Tiki made it very clear that the decision to not run on 3rd and 5, with Denver having already used their first two timeouts and allowing Jackson Dart to possibly make a huge mistake, which he did, was number one on that list.
Mm-hmm. And it was predictable.
And what was stunning is that after the game, Brian Daboll was asked a lot of questions, but not that. But today, when the media gets a day to listen to what Tiki had to say, they then say, all right, let's ask the question. So we bring you to a little bit earlier today when Brian Daboll is asked about the infamous decision now to not run and force Sean Payton to use his third timeout, but allow Jackson Dart to make a play with his arms.
One specific one you mentioned, last night, letting Jackson throw the ball 3rd and 5, right? They had used two of their timeouts. You could run it and make him use a third timeout. You obviously put trust in your rookie quarterback. You threw an interception. What is all the things that you're thinking about there, the ramifications, the pluses and minuses?
Have confidence in Jackson to go out like we did. Similar, I'm not saying it's the exact same thing, but the Chargers game when he hit Theo there. Thought we had a good play called. I had some pressure, kind of got tripped up, but I have a lot of confidence in him, and that's why we called it.
Is that basically a more physical error than a mental error? I mean, sometimes a young player just doesn't see the linebacker or something. He saw him.
He's right in front of him.
He saw him. Yeah. He just did not get the ball over him, right? So you would call that a physical.
He was kind of tripping up over his feet, and threw it to him, and
go ahead.
All got away from it, and they made a play.
Are you okay?
I had a lot of confidence in him. And our offense to go out there and execute at that particular time. And
you can kill it. Doesn't matter.
You've heard enough.
Yeah. So look, he believes in Jackson Dart. There's no doubt about it. And he trusts Jackson Dart, even though Jackson Dart has only started. This was his fourth start of his career. I get it. I understand it. And it's a good decision to make if you have nothing to lose, but you have 2-possession lead. The smart play is to force the Denver Broncos to use their third timeout and force them then to go the length of the field to score one of 2 scores that they need. So think about this. They have to go the length of the field because now you're punting with no timeouts and score once. Then they're going to have to somehow get the ball back, that stop you or an onside kick, and then go however long it is to score again. Like, that is improbable. Jackson Dart against a Vance Joseph defense, with all due respect to Jesse Minter, he's not Vance Joseph. He's not confusing you like Vance Joseph. In fact, I remember that play. Jesse Minter dropped back into his zone. It was very easy for Jackson Dart to find his tight end over the middle of the field because they were in a zone, right? And so It's the same, but it's not even close to the same.
No, it's not even close. And I appreciate the X's and O's because I don't remember any of that. But here's what I do remember, and it's important for the audience to know, because Brian Daboll said, just like the Charger game. And he just threw it out there like, oh, yeah, just like the Charger game. It's nothing like the Charger game. Can I just remind everyone what the situation was in the Charger game? Yes. Yes, Harbaugh just used his second timeout. That part's accurate. Yes, there was about two and a half minutes to go in the game. The difference was it was 3rd and 5 with a 3-point lead.
Yes.
So if you
one
run,
possession.
One possession. Not just one possession. A possession where Dicker the kicker could easily tie the game.
Right.
So in that spot, you're saying to yourself, look, I don't trust my defense necessarily to keep them from kicking a field goal. Let me let my young quarterback make a play, which he did,
and that's my,
to Theo Johnson. And that's a completely different situation.
And that's my problem. It's really... I talk about this all the time. Most people who follow sports or follow NFL in particular, they don't think about it. I say it often. And so I would implore fans to watch games in terms of possessions. It's just like baseball.
Yeah.
It's like, you know what? We got 9 outs left. You know what? We got 6 outs left. Oh, crap. We got 3 outs left. Who's coming up? Right? Like, you think about that in baseball. Why don't people think about that in football? I don't know, maybe it's too complicating to do the math. Like, all right, we got a 2-possession lead. There's only 3 minutes left. That means there's about a possession, maybe a possession and a half left.
Right.
Think of it in that regard. The Chargers game, you're exactly right. It was a 1-possession game. So if you give the ball back, that they have the possession.
I'm almost insulted that he used that as a comp. Like, well, just like we did in the Charger game.
And so
that's nothing like it.
But see, this is where I start to get concerned. Because there's calculus that goes into this. There's math. I mean, it's just simple math, right? We have a lead, a 2-possession lead. We can waste a possession, right? Because they need to score twice. We can waste a possession. Against the Chargers, you can't waste the possession.
Yeah.
Because if you give them back the possession, they can go back and tie or take the lead and win the game. So it's like the calculus is different.
And
the fact that people don't get that frustrates me, man. I know I've been around football for a long time, but to me it feels intuitive and simple. And most people aren't thinking about it. They're just thinking about what happened. Forget what happened. Think about the consequences of possessions. And if you don't do it, you don't understand why teams are making decisions.
Basketball and football has a clock. You got to use the clock to your advantage.
Yes.
In the NBA, which starts Wednesday night, at least for the Knicks, nationally on Tuesday night, if I've got a 9-point lead with 2 minutes to go, but I have a wide-open three early in the shot clock, I probably shouldn't take that shot.
No.
I probably should burn 20 seconds.
100%.
Because the math is telling me. Math is math.
Right.
I'm going to make it more difficult for them. By not chucking up a shot where, bad things can happen. I may miss an open three,
right,
which leads to a fast break, and now no time is off the clock. They hit a three, and my 9-point lead is a 6-point lead.
Right. It's funny, because I do that in basketball now. I think about it in 25 seconds per possession. And I'm like, all right, how many possessions are left? There's a minute and a half. All right, just a couple of three. Okay.
That's how Tiki decides when to leave a basketball game.
100%. 100%.
Well, you know what's funny?
Math tells me they don't have a chance. I'm out.
So yesterday I took my son to the Jets game. More on the Jets a little bit later on. And as the Jets got the ball back for their final possession, he's like, should we go? They're not scoring. And I said, Jet, you're right. They aren't scoring, but math is math. They have a chance.
They have a shot.
Yeah, one play here, boom, it's a tie game.
100%.
So I said to him, but you know what, son? When a game is mathematically over, I say this to Uncle Loogie all the time, that's when I leave. There was a chance, if I was in Denver, that at 26-8, I would be using calculus with my finger saying, is it almost mathematically
over? Well, a lot of Denver Broncos fans thought it was.
No, I know.
They were heading for the exits after the Theo Johnson touchdown.
But guess who broke the calculator? Brian Daboll. By deciding, I'm going to let my quarterback throw where all these bad things can happen, and it changes the calculus on how much time is left in a game.
100%.
Anything else from Daboll that's worth playing, Sean?
On if there will be any coaching changes.
Ooh! Hey, coach, will there be any coaching changes?
Are you considering any major changes, whether it's with a coach or a coordinator or a play caller to your staff, or are you just riding with the same guys you have?
Yeah, like I said, there's no, I'm not considering that. But we all got to do a better job. Starts with me. And there's plenty of opportunities to finish that game the way we wanted to, and we didn't get the job done.
There you go.
He's right. That's not the issue. It's not something I'm worried about. Shane Bowen's play calling. Stop.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Hey, it's Boomer.
And Geo.
Boomer and Geo is both a radio show and a podcast. You can find us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Catch the full episode, listen by individual hour, or jump straight to the highlights. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search Boomer and Geo, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcast.
Up. The defense played fantastic. They got two injuries at two of the most important positions on this team, and it came back to bite them.
Yeah.
That's a depth thing.
Yeah.
And I already explained it. If you missed it, you can rewind on the Odyssey app what happened on the 29-yard completion to Marvin Mims. That was not a play call thing. It was actually the right call. It was an execution by Drew Phillips thing. So and Kafka has been unbelievable. Ever since Jackson Dart has taken over, he's been unbelievable. He scored 32 points. Think how many times the Giants have scored 30 or close to 30 points in the last 4 weeks as opposed to what they did over the last 3 years.
That's the weird juxtaposition that I would be in, and this is the way I think I'd handle it as a Giant fan. I would still be fuming today. I'd probably be pissed off tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And by Tuesday night, I'd be fired up about my quarterback.
No, right.
I'd be completely fine because that's the other thing that's, of course, naturally, because this is about winning, that you're almost going to put to the side.
Yeah.
And that is, oh, my God, I got my guy. It's like your video about Tommy DeVito, yeah. Sean, 2 years ago, except this time it's real.
Right.
Like, oh, my God, I got my quarterback.
Yeah. Are we any less excited to watch the Giants Sunday because they collapsed and lost? Like, when we get to tomorrow? No. We're going to be fired up to do it. By the way, one more note on Bowen, little just in the back of my brain. You fire Shane Bowen today and things don't get better over the next 10 weeks. Who can you pin the blame on if you try to save your job at the end of the year?
Well, he's also been through a few defensive coordinators.
No, I understand that. But at the end of the year, well, you don't know what happens over the next 10 weeks. The defense has lapses. It's very easy to turn to whoever's making the decision and go, look, we're going to get rid of Shane Bowen here. Keep me for more years.
Keep the fall guy till the very end.
Yes.
Makes sense. 888-808-1019. Chris in Ronkonkoma. What's up, Chris?
Hey, guys. Great analogy, Evan, with the basketball. Tiki, and Evan, now I'm going to give you one decision Brian Daboll made that nobody's talking about.
Go ahead.
And it has to do with mathematics. You're up 19-0.
Kick the
extra
point.
Why don't you kick the extra point?
I agree. Because you're overthinking it.
Play the game out, kick the extra point, and play all the same plays, even your play, Tiki, that you said is the worst decision. Play it out. He doesn't go for two. You're up four. And at the end of the game, he needs to throw a Hail Mary.
Yeah.
You play the game out, it goes the same way.
I hear you. So you're up 19. You're 19-0, and you've already missed one extra point, and 20-0 doesn't feel appealing. The reason you try to go for two is that three touchdowns doesn't beat you. But at that point, are you scared?
So that's what it is. No, I think you answered it. He didn't trust his kicker.
Yes.
His kicker had missed an extra point earlier. Right. He wasn't attempting field goals with him.
Missed an extra point the week before.
Right. He wasn't trusting him. If we're just doing the two-point conversion game, like, all kickers are equal now.
Yeah.
I absolutely would have kicked the extra point.
100%.
Because the worst-case scenario at 19-0 is two touchdowns and a field goal. Two touchdowns with a two-point conversion and a field goal tie me up.
Yeah.
If I make it 20-0, that can't happen. They need literally three touchdowns.
Yes.
So if this
to beat you.
Exactly. So right. To me, the math absolutely points to extra point. To me.
Right.
Absolutely. The problem is, how could he trust the kicker?
Yeah.
And he turned out to be right because later in the game, obviously at the very end, he goes out to kick an obvious extra point
and he misses
it. Yeah, I think the other thing, if you're just going to do the math, two touchdowns and two-point conversions and a field goal tie you at 19.
Right.
So if you kick the extra point, this is to his to defend the caller, if you just kick the extra point and they get two touchdowns, two-point conversions, and a field goal, they're still down one.
They need three touchdowns. My point. That's why, to me, it was an absolute no-brainer extra point. But what no-brainers it is he had a kicker that couldn't kick.
Yeah, as we saw at the end of the game.
So you tell me, because I genuinely don't know this answer. I know Sean's been screaming about it on his 5 podcasts, and he is saying this is Joe Shane's fault. Whose fault is it that this continues to be a problem?
I mean, the roster construction, it has to be Joe's fault. Like, the decision to sign Graham Gano, what was that, 2 years ago?
Three. So I think he signed a 4-year deal.
Whatever it was, is coming back to haunt him. Graham Gano's a good kicker when he's healthy. The dude is just never healthy anymore. And it's cost us already multiple games because he simply is not ready on game day.
But then to make matters worse, this kicker from the international portal stinks. Yeah. I see teams all the time bring up backup kickers in, and they do a great job. What about the guy yesterday?
The Packers!
Yeah!
The guy was a substitute teacher 2 weeks ago, and he's kicking a 60-yard field goal.
Right.
The guy we have kicking now didn't start at Rutgers! At Rutgers!
I almost feel bad for Jude McAtomney because he said the right thing afterwards.
He was classy
and
after
it's just classy, and it's just like, oh man, I want to forgive you, but damn it, you lost us the game.
It's still your job. Your job is still to be the kicker of the New York Giants, and if we're not going to kick 50 yarders, that's on the GM. You got to make the extra points.
I'm going to ask you this question.
Yeah, they don't even try 50-yard field goals.
No, why would they?
They're punting when it's 53-yard field goal territory.
We are emotional, so I'll ask you guys this question today, but then I will ask it 8 weeks from now when the emotion has subsided.
Mm-hmm.
Who is a bigger villain in New York Giant history? Jude McAtomney.
McAtomney.
Or Matt Dodge.
Ooh.
Oh, it's Matt Dodge.
It's definitely Dodge.
Really?
Dodge, yeah. That's a loss the Eagle fans can point to forever. Look, with all due respect to yesterday's historic collapse.
Yeah, we're 2-5.
Right.
It is what it is. But there are 10 games left.
Right.
And if the Giants win half of them, because they could, I think they're competing in every game this year, they win half of them. It's a good thing, not good. I don't want to even say good thing, but it is what it is. This Giants team is prepared for every game they play in. You don't see them looking overmatched against any opponent that they in the Jackson Dart era. You're not looking at them as overmatched, and so that's a tick in the positive comment.
Okay.
For the coaching.
All right, so the Matt Dodge Deshaun Jackson game is on another pantheon of horrible.
So it's not about. So you're not even looking at this game and saying, "Oh my God, they lost. It sucks." And blah blah blah. That Matt Dodge thing.
Yeah.
Which we will not refer to. It's like heart crushing.
I know.
It's like someone reaches in your chest, like Indiana Jones in the Temple of Doom, and just grabbed your heart and just held it up in the air, and it started turned on fire and just blazing, and you're like, ah! That's what that felt like.
Tiki, further proof, they won a Super Bowl the next year and still didn't erase the fact that Matt Dodge did that. And with all due respect to yesterday's collapse, 10 years from now, who knows where the Giants go with the Jackson Dart era? I don't think we're going to talk about yesterday's loss the way we talk about the Eagle Matt Dodge
game. No, you're right.
No way.
I think you're right about
that. We're going to be like, oh yeah, I forgot about that game.
It's maddening in real time.
Exactly.
Because it's the second game this year that the Giants should have won and gave away.
No doubt.
Let's go to Andrew in Long Beach. Hey, Andrew.
Hey, guys. Tiki, thanks for all you did for the Giants. I was a big fan.
Thank you, bud.
And, you know, I recognize you've forgotten more football than I'll ever know, but I just got to push back on one thing.
Go ahead.
So the rushing three at the end of the game, it made it look like we turned Bo Nix, who was unexceptional, into Joe Montana. And any time I see a quarterback sitting back in the pocket, bouncing around with no one in his face, I expect something bad to happen.
Yeah.
And I know you said it's the players who didn't execute, but we had two injuries in our defensive backfield.
Right.
And our best players are up front. So why are we trusting the guys who aren't our best players to handle that situation and not unleashing the dogs up front, who are our best players?
Yeah,
and then I have a question after that.
Yeah, so I think the biggest thing, and I appreciate that question. I explained this a little bit earlier. After the Giants get the PI at the goal line, and then Jackson Dart scores, and they're up 33-31. The Denver Broncos have about 31 seconds. I forget what it was after
the kickoff. It's 32-30 Giants. They had 33 seconds left with zero timeouts.
With zero timeouts, and they're on the 25-yard line.
Yes.
So unless they are elite 2-minute conversions, balls to the sideline, out of bounds, like this elite operation, they can't score.
Right.
They're just not going to have enough time to go the distance. And Bo Nix is not that good of a quarterback this year.
Right.
And so what you do in that situation is you play man. You play man with lurkers, like people to just blow up plays in the middle of the field. And so you trust your guys to play man. And I know that he's getting on the defensive backs because they're quote-unquote not good enough. But in theory, one of the best defensive backs last year in all of football was rookie Drew Phillips, who's your nickel corner. Bo Nix had no idea what to do with that ball on that play. He looked at it and he was like, dude, there are robbers, there are lurkers in the middle of the field. I have nowhere to.
Also knew if he took a sack, the game is over.
Right.
He has to throw it up.
I have no idea what to do with this ball. And when he threw that, he threw it into basically three defenders.
Right.
Right? Tyler Newbin was underneath. He was one of the lurkers. Drew Phillips was a man coverage.
It was Deontay Banks. I'm watching the play now.
Who was over top?
Drew Phillips was over top. It was Banks. He runs past and Newbin's the underneath.
Yeah, Newbin's underneath. Drew Phillips is in man coverage. And one of the other safeties is on top. I can't remember.
Dane Belton was sitting there.
Yeah, Dane Belton's on top. So he basically threw the ball into three defenders.
Mm.
And Marvin Mims is not even aware this ball is coming to him.
It's actually four defenders.
Whatever.
It's crazy.
So this is a sail route. So a sail route is when you have a guy running a clear out and then someone else comes in underneath him. Right? So clear out, underneath. Bo Nix is supposed to throw that to the underneath route. He throws it to this clear out.
Mm.
And Marvin Mims just catches the ball when he turns his head. It's like, oh, wait, the ball's right in my gut.
Right.
Drew Phillips was chilling on the play. He was not urgent in the play. And that was his moment and this game to impact it positively. And he didn't do it. So get on Shane Bowen all you want. I'm just telling you, from watching what I watched, it was the right play call, defensive play call. The players didn't execute it. That's on them. And then the very next, the big throw down to Courtland Sutton, same thing. You play man, you get a rub at the line of scrimmage. Tay Banks is in a trail position, and Courtland Sutton just skies over him and basically posterizes him.
They ran two offensive plays. The two pass plays that converted for a combined 51 yards, and then the spike play that led to an extra 5 yards because Brian Burns couldn't get down the field. And so it ended in a very makeable 39-yard field goal, which I'm stunned by because I thought with 33 seconds left, here's what's going to happen. You guys are going to lose on a 64-yarder.
Yeah.
That's what I thought.
Right.
Meanwhile, I
see the pass going down the sideline. I'm like, that has no chance.
Right.
Oh, crap. No, it just it does.
Yeah. I thought you were going to lose on a 64-yarder and be like, oh, woe is me.
Right.
It was a 39-yarder.
It was an extra point, basically.
Dan is on Long Island. Hey, Dan.
Hey, how you guys doing?
What's up, Dan?
Tiki, I got a question for you. And I go back to the Giants. I had season tickets when they played in the Yale Bowl.
Okay.
And yesterday reminded me of a song we used to sing in the Yale Bowl, and it was called Goodbye, Allie.
Allie Sherman? So, see you later, Allie.
That's correct. So my question to you is, what is your criteria for firing a head coach in the NFL?
I think there's a series of things that have to start presenting themselves. One, players stop listening, and you can see that. You physically see that when players are checked out.
Right.
Two, team is not prepared, and that is not this Giants team. This Giants team is prepared every single week. Even in the Russell Wilson era, which lasted three games, It felt like this team is prepared, save for the Commanders game, which was a weird whatever. But Dallas and obviously the Jackson Dart era, they've been prepared. In fact, they beat two really good teams. So I'm not looking at this staff and saying this team has no chance, fire everybody, because I don't believe that. I like Dave's. I think he's a good coach. The thing that I'm struggling with is some of these decisions in games, and you can feel his emotion. Right, you feel how he's managing these things and saying, "I believe in Jackson Dart, kid. Go get this." The problem is he's a rookie, and rookies sometimes make mistakes and cost you games. And on that 3rd and 5, when you should be running the ball,
yeah,
he trusted a rookie.
I think that every coach, when you're determining if you're going to fire a coach or not, it's different depending on what stage you're at.
Mm-hmm.
So in the case of Aaron Glenn, because this will be a discussion a lot later in the season, it's very different firing a coach after 1 year. Usually it's, there's so much incompetence, I have to get rid of you. To me, with Brian Daboll, this is 4 years. It's like a full presidential administration. Right. I think the most important test one has to ask themselves after the season is over, because we still have 10 more weeks, is this question. Can I win a championship with him? Can he be the head coach that hoists a Lombardi?
Mm-hmm.
And if your answer is still, yeah, I can see it, then keep him.
Right.
If you have finally, with the data points of losses like yesterday and other losses, come to the conclusion we can't win with him, then you move on.
Yeah, but I also think, and you said this earlier, and you're 100% right, this is really the only thing that matters. Can you win?
Yeah.
Have you created a winner? And that's not, hey, guys are prepared. Hey, guys are still checked in. It's, do you win football games?
Yes. And that's
period.
That's the test for a guy after 4 years.
Yes.
Like what you laid out about, you know, are they listening? Are they there? That's a guy who you're going to fire after 1 or 2 years.
Right.
Because that's like the bare minimum.
Right. That's the conversation that you have about Aaron Glenn.
It's a different conversation.
100%. It's like, man, are they really listening to him?
Right.
Are they actually prepared for these games? And if the answer is no, you know what? Sorry, you're 1 and done. I don't think that's happening for the Jets, by the way. I'm just saying. And if you believe that a coach isn't engaging his players and they're not prepared, it doesn't matter if it's 1, 2, whatever, 12 years, run its course, for instance, then you got to move on from them.
And
but that's not the conversation that we're having about Dave's right now, because this team is very prepared and this team, I think, is very checked in. The problem is they're losing games that they shouldn't, and that's what's frustrating. So it's game day stuff that's costing them wins and losses.
And for the Jet fan that wants their pound of flesh, Joe B. in 35 minutes. WFN NFL football is powered by Verizon. We'll come back. We'll get to more of your telephone calls. Oh, what a day. A day to recover and lick our wounds after a stunning Giant defeat, blowing a huge lead against the Denver Broncos, losing 33-32. If you missed any of the show, you can rewind it on the Odyssey app. We'll get back to your calls in a minute. We'll get to Brian Burns being angry after the game. But as you know, Sean does a wonderful job of dad jokes. Some may say he's the king of dad jokes. Would you agree with that?
I would.
Okay. I was listening to WFN early this morning, and I heard someone attempt to make a dad joke. So I was curious if you, Sean, would want to rate the dad joke.
Sure. I'll be fair about it.
Ladies and gentlemen, I take you back to 2 a.m. during the update by the great Peter Schwartz.
There's this guy, Owen, on the Jets who keeps changing his last name. The Panthers beat the Jets 13-6 at MetLife Stadium. So that guy, Owen, well, his last name was, his name was Owen 6 before Sunday. Now it's Owen 7.
No. The key to a good dad joke is it's got to be quick and to the punch, and it can't have an elongated setup. And if you don't get it, maybe it missed. Some get it and some laugh. You knew what was coming for a good 20 seconds there.
Yeah, that's funny.
So Tiki liked it.
Tiki liked it. He's smiling.
I didn't like the payoff because you knew what was coming. Took too long to get there.
So I heard this, not live, but on the Odyssey app, because I wanted to rewind and hear Chris McMonagle cry on the radio. It always gives me joy. So I hear the update, and I'm like, oh, look, Peter. Peter has that. And when he kept saying there's a new guy on the Jets named Owen, I honestly was very confused.
Oh, you didn't know it was coming? You didn't know the Owen joke?
I didn't see it coming. Then when he said it, he kind of stumbled to get it. I was like, what? Oh. So I didn't like it, but I also didn't see it coming.
But I think you're right. I think it needed to be explained quicker.
Yeah. There's a classic prank when teams are really bad where, like, rivals after a win will call, like, a local sports bar. And this is, like, gone viral for a long time. Hey, who is it? It's Owen. Owen who? Owen 7. Deal with that. Ha, ha, ha. You know, that kind of
crap.
So
if you were making fun of a Jet fan today, let's say you're making fun of me, or you're doing a sports update, how would you have presented the Owen joke for the Jets?
Okay, so if I'm doing a sports update or whatever?
WFAN 2020 Sports.
A new reporter approached Aaron Glenn. Owen. Owen who? Owen 7. Ha, 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 ha.
That's better.
By the way, I don't even like the joke, but you get the point.
All right. Well, I thought of you when I heard Peter Schwartz do that. Good job, Peter. Nice attempt.
Maybe I've started something here.
The other thing I heard, and hopefully you'll be able to hear this clearly. If not, me and Tiki will describe it, was after the Giants lost this game. This is like literally a minute after the game is over. Players are now leaving. They're going back into the locker room. And there was a camera on with sound. And we heard Brian Burns screaming to himself, or screaming out loud, some of his emotions after the game. We had to bleep some of the words out, because you can imagine. Here it is. Take a listen. So you can hear him say he was upset about dropping 8.
Drop 8.
Now, your opinion, A, on Burns showing that emotion, and B, what he was saying.
I mean, he should. I mean, he should be pissed off. I don't think it was a horrible decision, though. It just, Drew Phillips didn't make the play. The play was there to be made. He just didn't make the play. It's the only play they ran that, by the way. The only play they ran the drop 8 was that one play.
So why is he complaining about it? Do you think because he hasn't seen the tape, doesn't actually know what the heck ended up even happening on the play? Is that possible?
Or he just wants to get after the quarterback. And by rushing 3, you have no shot and get to the quarterback. And so there's two different philosophies on what you do when a team is desperate. The team they're playing, for instance, because we saw this against the Jets last week, when it's third down or fourth down, right? Because it was fourth down at the end of the Jets game last week, right?
Mm.
And they go for it. What did Vance Joseph do? Brought everybody.
Right.
Brought the house.
And we saw what happened.
Right. Or you try to play coverage behind. And so the philosophy is not what Brian Burns wanted, and I get it. Look, they're one of the strengths of this Giants team is their pass rush. And while they had a couple, what, they have 3 sacks or 2 sacks?
I think it was just the two Burns sacks.
They believe that when the game is on the line, put it in the hands of your biggest strength.
I would even wonder, because of that last play to Courtland Sutton, it kind of changed things.
Mm-hmm.
When Knicks found Sutton for 22 yards, it set up what was a very reasonable field goal. It was a 39-yard field goal. After the play that was made in the middle of the field to Marvin Mims,
mm-hmm.
it was set up, if they didn't gain another yard, to be about a 68-yard field goal.
Yeah.
Which I think eventually Sean Payton would have tried.
Yeah, of course.
No luck. It got moved up because of the penalty on Brian Burns because he didn't get back quick enough. I think we are all kind of forgetting about the importance of what that play could have been because it was a 49-yard field goal, and because of the Sutton play, it turned into a reasonable field goal. So right. That neutral zone infraction is like whatever. If they ended up losing on a 63-yard field goal, which I jokingly said to you before, halfway not joking, that's what I thought was going to happen.
Right, because that's what happened in Dallas.
Right. If they lose on
it was a tie. It wasn't that tied the game and they lost in overtime.
But essentially it contributed to the loss. If they would have lost on a 63-yard field goal, that should have been a 68-yard field goal, but Brian Burns couldn't get down the field, is it not fair to wonder that in a possession in which you know they're going to have to race to the line, they have no timeouts, did it make sense to even have Brian Burns on the field as good as he is?
If he's
you knew this was a risk.
Probably not. But again, the very quick, you don't know to do this until you experience thing to have done, if you're Brian Burns, is just run off the field. And he wasn't thinking about it.
Further on that play, and what it seems, because Dexter Lawrence was asked about this too, wasn't just about dropping 8, but it was the idea that the 11 guys they had on the field had never played as a collective 11 unit a single snap in the NFL together,
right?
Because they had to play Nick Jones and Braid, but also it was Roy Robertson-Harris as one of the 3 pass rushers with Dexter Lawrence and Abdul Carter off the field.
Hmm.
Dexter Lawrence said it wasn't his call not to be on the field for that play, and he came in for the final 2 plays.
Right.
So it's the idea, if you're only going to rush 3, why is one of them Roy Robertson-Harris?
Yeah, it didn't make sense. Probably because, I don't know. I don't know.
Like, that's, I mean, two of your best players are on the sideline.
Doesn't make sense. Even if they're fatigued.
Yeah.
You let them go, try to do their thing.
It's closing time.
I get why if Brian Burns was upset. I really do.
By the way,
I don't think that the drop eight was necessarily the biggest issue.
Now that you mention my cousin Roy Robertson Harris,
go ahead, bring up the turning point of the game nobody's talking about.
Well, I'm not going to call it a turning point of the game, but how about him batting up and missing the interception?
Yeah. Well, I mean,
that was a pick, and that would have stopped the game right there because that was at 19-0 first down from the two.
Yeah.
He knocks that ball up. He could have sexy-dexied that thing.
True.
I didn't call it. Are you calling it a turning point of the game?
That was my not so subtle turning point.
It was an ending of the game. That ends the game.
Yep.
In a sense.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hey, it's Boomer.
And Geo.
Boomer and Geo is both a radio show and a podcast. You can find us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Catch the full episode, listen by individual hour, or jump straight to the highlights. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search Boomer and Geo, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radnor, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcast.
100%.
Because you're now in the fourth quarter. Yeah, they're not going to have three possessions in the fourth quarter.
Game's over, especially right. With a first and goal from the 2 yard line, and he knocks that up and intercepts it.
Again, to me, this always goes back to possessions. You're not going to have three possessions in the fourth quarter unless your offense is absolute crap.
Yeah,
and that just didn't seem like it was going to be the case. So if you're right, if he intercepts that pass and it's now 19-0, they haven't scored yet. The game is most likely closer to being over.
Let's get back to your calls, 888-808-1019. Nick is in the Bronx. What's up, Nick?
Hey, guys. I just want to let Tiki know I love how he breaks down football.
Thank you.
So I really appreciate it, especially for a layman. You know, but a couple things I wanted to get at. One of them was you're saying he had no confidence in the kicker,
right.
But he did go kick an extra point after Tracy's touchdown. So
that doesn't
really jive with me that he didn't have confidence in the kicker.
Yeah, it's weird because I feel like sometimes it was not confidence in kickers, and other time it was like we need to get the missed extra point back. And because we're up 19, which is three scores, two touchdowns with two point conversions and a field goal, we're not putting ourselves in position to lose. Like if it was 18-0, you'd kick the extra point because then two touchdowns with 2 point conversions plus a field goal beats you, right? So you're not putting yourself in a losing situation at 19-0 by going for two. But you do put yourself in a winning position if you make the extra point or the 2 point conversion. You know what I mean?
So yeah.
It's calculus. It's math. And it's all philosophy. Certain coaches have different philosophies on the number. And Dave's was, I want to make it a 3-touchdown game. To beat us, you have to score 3 touchdowns. That's what he wanted to do.
Did the wonderful Giant Bee reporters ask more questions about the kicking situation, Sean? Obviously, we can't hear the press conference. We're live on the air. You tell me.
I have went through the full 10 minutes of Brian Daboll today. I did not personally hear anything about replacing the kicker or moving on.
Do they need Tiki to say it on the post-game show for them to know to ask the question?
Maybe they do. Evan. Maybe they do.
Are you disappointed they didn't ask that? I'd like to know.
I am disappointed a little bit.
That is weird, though, because that's the most obvious.
The obvious question is Younghoe Koo kicking on this team next year?
Next
week. Or are you bringing in more
practice squad? I mean, they're likely to have an open competition.
Can you just, like, I do this with Costello, and he's very cool about
it. What would you like to do,
Evan? I text Costello sometimes and say, hey, do you mind asking this question? And sometimes he tells me to go bleep myself. Mm-hmm. And sometimes he's like, that's a great idea. I'll do that. Like, Brian and I have a nice relationship. I know that you like to kiss ass all the Giant reporters. Why don't you give them some advice and ask about the kicking situation?
Sure. I'm going to tell Pat Leonard to do that right now.
You're not close with Pat Leonard.
No,
you hate
him. My guy. I like Pat. I don't hate Pat.
And it's already too late. They already have the...
Well, we got a week's worth of talking. Now. Yes. I'll text him. Don't worry, Evan.
All right, thanks. Let's go to Steve on Long Island. Hey, Steve. Hello, Steve. Steve going once.
What up?
All right, Steve is gone. Right, Dave is in Rockville Center. What's up, Dave?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
We're good. What's happening?
Peaky, do you think the game has to evolve, or should have evolved, to the point where front offices and head coaches don't leave 100% of the burden of these critical game situation decisions on the shoulders of the head coach?
Well,
let me ask a couple of questions.
Yeah, I think most of them have a clock management guy. I think the Giants
that's
do.
That's what I'm saying.
I think the
Why
Giants...
don't we have a bona fide, two things, a bona fide assistant head coach and a coordinator for situational game management. He manages, he doesn't make the decision, the head coach does, but he's there for the head coach.
Yeah.
And he's an expert in clock management, timeout usage, critical play calling.
They have, but to your point, they have an assistant head coach. His name is Mike Kafka. Yes. The way they kept him, I think two cycles ago, is they gave him a promotion, quote unquote, by saying, you're not only the OC, you're the assistant head coach.
Yeah, but he wouldn't be the situational guy. Like, that's usually a separate guy who's does the analytics of going for two, versus onside, all that stuff,
mm-hmm.
right? And so I don't know if the Giants have that person. Maybe I'll look real quick, but I don't remember hearing someone's name that has that with the New York Giants.
I wonder, though, with Daboll and his full-blown love that he's in with Jackson Dart, which is understandable, if it would have mattered. Like, in his brain, it's like 3rd and 5. I want Jackson Dart to make a play.
Right.
I believe in him. It's like Tommy Lugau. We're playing Madden. Like, I love Jackson Dart. I'm going to ask him to make a play. Logic out the window.
Right.
Clock management out the window. That's my quarterback. Go make a play. And I know that sounds irrational, but when you hear Daboll's answer for why he did it, that's basically what it is without, the pom-pom waving. I love the quarterback. I believe he can make a play. Even though that's not the point. The point isn't, do you believe in him? The point is, the clock is on your side. Force Sean Payton to use a timeout. Make sure that there isn't some disastrous play and kick the ball down the field.
But you brought up basketball before. Knicks are up 11, 2 minutes on the clock. JB's got an open jumper.
No.
Okay.
What are you talking
Steph
about?
Steph Curry has an open three.
No, he won't do that.
No. I'm not saying they won't do it.
He wouldn't, because he's smart.
But it's different in basketball because the player makes the decision. I'm saying, would you be annoyed if Jalen Brunson made the decision himself to take the jumper? I disagree.
And
he's got an open look, take it.
But Tommy, we're going to play a game this year. I'm actually going to follow this. And every time the Knicks have like a 10-point lead with 3 minutes to go, I'm going to chart this and bring this up to you. Guys know the clock. And Jalen and Steph are great examples of just understanding the situation. They're not going to force a shot like that. They're not going to do
but
it.
I think it's
stupid.
But I think it's also based on opponent, situation, like where you are. Now, you want to bring up yesterday, Dart on the road. It wasn't the right situation. But I think in the NBA, it's situational.
I don't think so. Not early in the shot clock. And also, to be fair, the situation I'm laying out is not really realistic. Because I'm saying really early in a shot clock, you have an open three with 2 minutes to go, up by 10.
Right.
Like, I don't even think we're going to get a lot of these scenarios to use as an example. But the point is, guys understand the situation and know the clock game. Especially smart, brilliant players like Steph and Jalen Brunson. So, no. And no to Brian Daboll.
Yeah.
And no to Andy Reid. Because I don't even think he would do it with Patrick Mahomes as great as he is.
Yeah.
The clock's on your side while you're screwing around.
Yeah, and you had a possession to waste. Then that's and you needed that possession to take the Denver Broncos 3 timeouts. The Giants do have an offensive assistant and game manager.
What's his name?
His name is Cade Knox. He's probably 6 or 7 years old, graduated from Harvard. He works with Taysir Siam, who is the director of football data and innovation, to help Daves with the in-game analytic decisions. Now, I don't know if he's in their ear, if they are in his ear in these moments saying, hey, you should go for two here, or hey, this is a go for it on fourth down. I don't think that's necessarily happening. It's probably a pre-prescribed chart that he thinks about or looks at?
Well, I think it's probably very similar to what happens with managers. And here's the information. Do what you want with it. You're the head coach.
That's right.
Dave here's the information.
The chart today about the two, so that could be it.
Right.
Just going through that. Also, Evan, you're going to like this guy. Redhead.
Who?
Cade Knox, the game manager.
Oh. Yeah. Well, you know who else is a redhead? Jude Mikitomni.
I wasn't going to touch that with you today, but yes.
No, oh, I know he's a redhead. I was very upset with him. I was like, you're not making us look good right now. Gabe is in Wayne, New Jersey. What's up, Gabe?
Hey, Gabe.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking listen, I got to say this. I'm not a Giants fan, all right? But look, Brian Daboll and Joe Shane need to stay in this team, and here's why. There are only two teams who have scored more than 20 points on the Denver Broncos. And both of them have quarterbacks that were massaged, trained, selected, or otherwise loved up on by Brian Daboll and Joe Shane. You got Indiana Jones in Indianapolis, and you got Jackson Dart, the start Dart move.
That's true.
All right, but look, all kidding aside, these guys, they're developing. I mean, they're developing, right? Like, if you want to talk about getting rid of a defensive coordinator, fine, so be it. I know that, Tiki, you don't necessarily agree that was the right call.
Well, not now. People are talking about firing him right now, Gabe.
Agreed. But, like, don't fire Daboll. Don't fire Shane. That's my push. Again, as an outsider, a Packer fan, I'm looking at the situation. They're developing young talent, and that is so crucial.
I 100% agree with you. This team is so much better than it was a year ago, and especially 2 years ago. They have depth. Their offensive line is playing great football. I think Andrew Thomas gave up one pressure, and as a unit, maybe they gave up four. Those includes the sacks that they gave up. So they are so much better. They have game-breaking ability. They had a bunch of 20-plus yard plays against one of the best defenses in football. This team is good. And people are hearing me and thinking I'm saying I'm down on this team. I'm not down on this team. I'm saying this team needs to learn how to win, and that's something that sometimes takes time. But as Evan and I have been talking about for a while now, the only thing that's going to matter come week 17 as we head into the 18th and week 18 and the end of the regular season is, did you win games?
That's it.
Did you win? And if you don't, then how are you retaining a coach who hasn't won a ton of games over the last 3 years?
I'm going to give Sean this research project because it's simple, it's easy, and he'll use it on all his podcasts.
All right, minor league baseball reference?
Nope, it's Giants related. It's right up your alley. The New York Giants have now scored 66 points in their last 2 weeks. 66!
Wow.
34 against Philly, 32 in Denver. Give me the last time the Giants scored that many points in back-to-back games. Good luck. I don't know when that is. It could be like the Ben McAdoo, Tom Coughlin era. Could be that long ago. By the way, just for the record, he was asked about the kicking situation.
Yes.
So great job by the Giant Riders. I don't know why Sean questioned you. I think you're the best beat in America. So what'd he say?
It's not even worth playing. We'll see what happens.
Oh, I gave no answer?
No.
We'll see what happens. You know what that's code for?
Yeah.
I'm firing his ass.
Right. Next.
International portal be damned. We'll get back to the Giants in a little bit. We'll also check in on our Jackson Dart stat predictions. But Joe Beningo was in the building to watch the New York Jets do it again, sink to a brand new low of ineptitude. We pick Joe's brain on the state of the Jets coming up next.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Hey, it's Boomer.
And Geo.
Boomer and Geo is both a radio show and a podcast. You can find us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Catch the full episode, listen by individual hour, or jump straight to the highlights. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search Boomer and Geo, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.
Hey, everyone. I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow, it has been 20 years since the show premiered. That seemed, I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.